Watch The Atheist Experience live Sundays at 4:30 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytaxp and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callaxp.
It's time to get sexy on Secular Sexuality.
Welcome to Secular Sexuality, the only ACA show where show prep and research can lead to chafing. My name is Laura McGee, and I am joined tonight by my co-host who always brings the best guests. Welcome, Sin Sage. And we are joined tonight by director... Oh, little delay there. Hi, Sin. And we are both joined by director, performer, and advocate Courtney Trouble. Welcome, Courtney.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So tonight, we are going to be talking about two things that only get better when you put them together, body positivity and porn. So give us a call with your stories and questions at 512-991-9242 or tiny.cc/callsex because the show is coming right now.
All right. Well, in a world with a myriad options, I am very, very excited to have the two of you on tonight to discuss what your favorites are. So every week we do a little quick discussion on what is turning us on this week. And I am so excited to hear what you two might have to say. So Courtney, let's go ahead and start with you as the guest. What is turning you on?
I love this question because I just got something really interesting from the New York Toy Collective. They sent me a gift and I thought it was like really appropriate for the topic of today's show, body positivity and porn. This is a strap-on harness that the New York Toy Collective made. And I just think it's so cool. I'm so obsessed with it. I was looking at it and I was like, I feel like you could fit like a 60-inch, 70-inch ass in this thing. So makes me really happy. And of course, they were kind enough to send along a dildo with it. It's like movable and stuff. So my shout out today is the New York Toy Collective is turning me on. Thank you.
I love it. Yeah, not gorgeous. Only is it like versatile in sizes, but it's, yeah, I was going to say it's gorgeous. I love the blue leather, or it might be purple, but it looks kind of blue.
It has straps. So like it gets even bigger. Yeah, and like this might even be like a small size or medium. I don't know, but I'll find out.
It's but beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know, but it looks gorgeous.
It's really nice. Like as a fat femme to have like harnesses that are both beautiful and functional, and this one looks like it's going to fit me really well. Like it's that classic Terra Firma style where it kind of like scoops your booty in the back. That's kind of my favorite.
Yeah,
so, I haven't tried it on yet, but I'm excited to do it.
Well, thank you so much for bringing it to the show. I'm excited I got to see it. Sin, what's turning you on?
Yeah, so first of all, I freaking love that harness. It's gorgeous. But yeah, what's turning me on today? You know, I hope I hadn't mentioned this before, but you know, sometimes that can happen. But I was recently a guest on this podcast that's called Good Girls Talk About Sex. And it's hosted by Leah Carey, who is a sex coach, sex educator, you know, et cetera, all those wonderful things. And it's just really anyone can apply to be a guest on her podcast. Any woman, any girl, any person can apply. Awesome. And then you go on, you just talk about, she'll ask you questions sort of about like, when were you first sort of introduced to sexuality as a concept? How did you learn about, you know, how babies are made, things like that? What was your family situation like around sex when you were growing up? And then getting into like, as an adult, like relationships, your sexuality, these things. And the theory behind it is that the more that we talk about sex, The less shame there is, the less guilt around it and all of that stuff, which of course is like a really big deal for me. And so I identified with it so much that as soon as I found out about it, I sent her a DM on Twitter and I was like, how can I be a guest on the show? I went and filled out the form. I'm like, let's do this. And we just recorded my episode on Tuesday. So it'll be out within the next couple of months. But there are lots of really amazing stories on there. Sex workers, other types of sex workers, and just all kinds of people. So highly recommend Good Girls Talk About Sex podcast with Leah Carey.
I love it. And you said that like she just has anybody on. You don't have to specifically be a professional or know anything specific about sex in order to come on. You can just be an everyday person just wanting to talk about it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's no preconditions. It's just, yeah, just girls talking about sex. And it's great.
Fantastic. Well, and that's exactly what the three of us are going to do tonight. We are going to have a lot of conversations about sex. So I wanted to open it up with, because we're going to be using a lot of phrases tonight as we discuss body positivity in the porn industry. And so there's a couple that I wanted to kind of throw out there right at the beginning, just to make sure that people understood the context of what we're talking about. So, Courtney, you used the term BBW, and I'll admit that when I first heard it, I didn't know what that term was. And so I know there's also a lot of other terms maybe around it. Can you tell us just really quickly what that means and what we're kind of framing our show around tonight?
Well, sure. So, and I'll clarify, I don't actually call myself a BBW at all. So BBW stands for Big Beautiful Woman. And so the reason why I don't really identify as BBW because I'm not big. I'm like 4'11". I can admit I'm beautiful. I also don't identify as a woman. I identify as non-binary genderqueer. So if anything, I call myself like plus size petite or fat. Or curvy, you know, or a fat femme, which I believe is a strictly queer identity, you know, femme sort of coming from the idea of like butch femme. And for me, what I can say is that BBW gets used with me as a marketing term. So occasionally I'll use it as a hashtag to fish and see if any fans out there are interested. But for the most part, for me, it just doesn't fit. So historically, it's been used in classifieds or dating, like the straight heterosexual dating world. So you would use BBW as a shortened term because in classifieds, you only had a certain amount of characters. So it's one of those abbreviations like ISO in search of, right. Height, weight, proportionate, HWP, right? So BBW is from that. It comes from that. So a shortened version of BBW or Big Beautiful Woman. So then if we dig just a little bit deeper and like, where did the idea of the Big Beautiful Woman come from? It comes from sexism and fat phobia, unfortunately, because, you know, what is a big, beautiful woman if not some kind of exception, right? Like, I think the idea of a BBW is somehow alluding to a fat girl that's just magically pretty.
Or like, you're pretty for other reasons or whatever. You're right. The connotations can have like a negative spin depending on how you put it.
It's so, like this wild thing where she's like, she's a big girl, but she's beautiful.
She's also beautiful, right?
Yes. Yeah. Cool. So it definitely makes me a little nauseous. You know, like,
absolutely.
I do use the term sometimes to engage with capitalism, you know, but
exactly. That's what I was going to say. Then it's just like a lot of words that, thankfully, due to one of our colleagues, friends in the industry, Chelsea Poe, you know, it's kind of like one of these terms that should probably be pushed out a little bit and seen as not the kind of way we want to be talking about different people and different bodies. And so Chelsea Poe, you know, she made it her mission to get trans slurs off of box covers and things like that for those capitalistic purposes. And as far as I can tell, she was really successful with that. And so, you know, maybe we need to be sort of thinking about making a campaign to get rid of BBW, because I'll say that, like, I didn't even know what, like, when you just told me about the history of it and stuff, that it was for classifieds and things like that. I just kind of thought it was always a porn term, you know, to market to people, the many people who want to see that kind of stuff, you know. But it's the same thing as, like, I've, you know, I know other people who are maybe non-binary, and they're like, well, I just have to sometimes call myself female or whatever just because of marketing, even though it doesn't quite fit.
And it's definitely part of the game. For my sanity, I just try not to use that most of the time.
Totally.
Well, I appreciate you guys making the distinction and letting us know so that as we hear these terms, either on today's show or even just out and about in the community, you guys can have a broader understanding of what some of those terms mean and how to use it. But your guys's, Sin and Courtney, your comments on the bad and good about using those terms lead really, really well into our topic tonight, which is body positivity. So you have these terms that could be thrown around kind of nonchalantly in the porn world or when you're looking for porn, and really they could have some negative connotations. So what we're talking about tonight, though, is the positive that we can bring to the porn industry in terms of body positivity. So with that in mind, we were preparing for this show, and I went to do my research about body positivity in the porn industry and Googling phrases like fat shaming in porn. It's difficult to do that without getting interesting results, not necessarily the wrong results, just not the results we want to talk to or about today. So leave it to Christy to do the digger deeping and get us on track. And Courtney, Christy found your name everywhere. So you do a lot of activism in this space. What can you tell us about the work that you do?
Well, thank you for finding my name all over the place in that field. I definitely think that like fat positivity, body positivity is what got me interested in doing porn in the first place. So just a little back history. I was a phone sex operator, started when I was 18 years old to make a little bit more money than just your minimum wage job at Blockbuster, which I was also doing. So I had a lot of fun doing phone sex by like 18 or 19 years old. I am learning a lot about my sexuality and like what about like what my clients like and what my customers like and stuff. And there was just a big contrast between what I was pretending to be on the phone and like what I was really interested in sexually. So I started making porn. And for me, I had to do it all independently because when I started looking into the kind of porn that I wanted to make, what kind of wanted to be in was lesbian porn and alternative porn. And so we're talking like the year 2001, and everyone is like wearing low rise skinny jeans and is a size 00. And there's just no way in, you know. Even I'm going to try not to say too many names, but I've definitely said this company before in my thing. So it's pretty well known that Suicide Girls responded to my application. They're an alt porn website that's been around forever. They were supposed to be like feminist, ethical, women run, all this stuff. Like, oh, we're like the answer to quote unquote bad porn, which we'll talk about. But they rejected me because I was fat.
Oh,
and I was just like, so that's cool, but like, what do I do? Like, I'm happy for all of these girls who get to make like empowering porn, but like, where does the fat girl fit in? And it like turns out there really wasn't much that didn't feel like humiliating or poorly lit somehow, or just really cheap and bad. So my activism, I guess, as an artist is making space for myself, creating lesbian queer films, creating and queer films with plus size people in it, with people of all sizes. I really do see my interaction with the mainstream porn industry and sort of my embedding in that world. You know, Sin and I go to the AVN Awards. I do stuff like that so that people can see my fat body. And I may be one of like five porn performers in those spaces who are over a size 7, 6. And that's That's activism to me, to keep going. And no matter how many times people have said no to me, you're too fat, you don't have big enough tits, you look like too much of a dyke, none of those have ever convinced me to stop making porn. And so I see that as like an act of revolution. And like, oh, when I say it that way, I'm pretty proud of myself.
Hell yes.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so Sin looked like we were about to respond, so sorry for the pause. But so we've said it before on this show that anything can be used as a slur. But I love the way that you're just owning different labels. And we've always taken the stance before that fat isn't a bad word. But I'm curious how people tend to perceive the word when we talk about it in porn, and if there's other person-centered terms that we should understand. So what are some of those terms that we can like just take and empower and use in porn that maybe other people might take or use as a slur?
Yeah, I'm interested to hear this too, Courtney, because I will say that, you know, I like, okay, when I hear you talking about it and you use the word fat and stuff like that, but like, I have to admit that like, it still makes me feel sort of uncomfortable to say it. Like, is it okay for me to say it? You know,
right.
I really want to be sensitive. Like, I don't want to use any terms that like do cause someone to be uncomfortable or stuff like that. And so it's just that, like, yeah, I like curvy.
For yourself or for me?
Well, and it's nice to have like terms that we can embrace like that.
Yeah, like, so, I mean, if you're going to like throw a slur at someone, like, you're going to throw that word at them, you know, you're going to be rude. It's going to sound like an insult. But, you know, if you're just complimenting someone or, you know, taking full stock of what's in front of you, you know, Sin, if we're going to do a scene together and you're going to say, God, I love your fat ass, I'm going to be into that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I love it. When someone says, I love your fat ass, I'm like, fuck yeah. Absolutely.
So, you know, it's all in the delivery. And I can't speak for anyone else, but as a fat femme, like, as, like, you know, like a lesbian or a queer person, you know what these are.
Absolutely.
Either way, I like
So, what are some of the terms then? You know, like, you mentioned big.
Sorry about the lag. Well, you're good.
Nope, that's okay. We're gonna power through it anyway. So we threw out some terms earlier that you were saying that you were trying to kind of like work against. So what are some of the other terms that you can think of that we should avoid then?
Oh, I'm not gonna say them. But okay, so like,
oh no, don't put them out there in the universe.
We were talking about Chelsea Poe a little bit earlier and how she was getting rid, that she was trying to get rid of derogatory terms sort of in the mainstream trans porn industry and just in the mainstream porn distribution industry at large is, you know, it's still, it's not like they're all bad people working at these places, but it's still taking a long time to get like words like trans woman or like fat porn star, for instance, or plus size porn star, like words like that, kind of up the chain to the CEOs and the people who matter. Like, I feel like I can get good, like body positive words into the hands of porn reviewers pretty often. You know, there's definitely some activism there to be done when you're talking to journalists, when you're on radio shows like this, to be able to parse down the language. But, you know, for sure, coming from the queer world, like, you know, even the word queer, like we've reclaimed that. And for me, the word queer is super important because lesbian only fits some of the time, like trans boy kind of fits every once in a while. Like sometimes I'm a gay man. Like there's just no telling what I'm going to be at any given point. So for me, specifically as a non-binary person, queer is the only word that like is 100% all the time. But
same.
And I guess that's like, you kind of have to ask people, you know, I ask people like, how they identify a lot, I think, like what makes you you, like what identities are important to you, what kind of activism do you do around your identity, like, you know, like for me, a lot of it's wrapped up in being queer and being fat, you know, and, you know, I think we all kind of have something we're working towards.
So I think that brings up a really good point when you talk about the terms that we use, whether they're offensive or not, is really going to depend more on the person. Like there's no one term, there's no one size fits all. Like some terms are going to be okay with some people and not okay with others. And so you bring up a really good point about just really how subjective the porn industry is, like with how people are going to respond. So I'm curious on like what treatment or what kinds of treatment or stigma exists towards fat performers or other forms of body diversity inside the industry. You mentioned trans as well, so you're welcome to go anywhere you want with it. But what are some of the sort of stigmas? And you brought up a little bit with, you know, trying to get hired. But what are some other things that you've run into?
So I think like some of the problems I've run into for sure is just, I mean, a scarcity of opportunities, you know. They say porn is this billion-dollar industry, and, you know, perhaps it is, but it doesn't necessarily mean that production money or funding is going to independent studios or, you know, some of the places that we might want to see porn come out of. I definitely think like, it really is about casting for me. You know, I think that there should be a lot more attention, a lot more eyeballs put on indie porn productions that are just kind of like working with indie performers, content creators. And, you know, I think there's a lot there also with keywords, like some of like the way that porn is marketed towards people can be really confusing. You know, I feel like if you're on like a tube site, you're going to be confronted with racism, fat phobia, inhumane comments. So like that just exists because humans are humans.
Yeah.
And porn is no different. People are like this with music and movies and books. So that's what I've learned.
Yeah. And it really is true. You know, like we are independent creators. You know, our studios are a nice size. I know that, you know, we make a decent living and stuff like that, but you know, I don't have a budget for my productions. When I make stuff that's not a custom video, I just usually am working on trade content with other performers and stuff like that. I know that's how we put our movies out. That's how we distribute, you know, make the movies to distribute through Trouble Films, is mainly not a lot of capital to be hiring performers, paying them and getting studios. You know, the camera that I work with is a couple grand, whereas these studios are like multi-million dollar companies, some of them, and they have $20,000 cameras and a whole crew, and just all of this capital behind them. And so, you know, it is sort of gate kept, especially around bodies, especially around the way people look. So, you know, like if at some point in my life, I decided to do a massive change and like cut my hair really short and sort of change the way I express my gender in a drastic way, there's a good chance that these mainstream companies might start shying away from hiring me, as they have in the past. And, you know, just from like working with Courtney and watching how that, watching those, seeing those companies, you know, not hiring people like Courtney and other performers like that, and just why not, when we know, I mean, we have this data to see that really porn consumers like all kinds of different things. And from what I can tell, especially the consumers of like lesbian porn, the main thing they care about seeing are two people who genuinely want to be having sex with each other, and two people that it doesn't look like are faking and going through the motions and being gay for pay or whatever. And so I think it's really, at this point especially, it's almost just this willful block that they've decided, if you're going to work for these big companies, this is what it has to be. And that is another way that I think it is kind of, you know, it sucks to be pushed, like not allowed into those spaces. But at the same time, I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, Courtney, you especially, like you were way ahead of the curve. You were making your own stuff a decade before anybody even was starting to think about making their own stuff. And, you know, that's speaking for myself as well, for sure, too. And then so when the Pornhub thing did come along and studios weren't really hiring the way that they used to be, I was like, shit, I guess I got to get myself a camera and like try to get my shit together and figure this production thing out. But Courtney, you were already doing it for so long. And doing it is like, you made queer porn. Like, that's why I wanted to work with you. I wanted to get my foot into that side of things and not just be seen as, you know, the girl that does all like the pretty, like just, you know, the girl porn, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, no, but I'm queer. And like, I want that to be I want to be represented in that way because that's more how I identify. So that's why I was so nervous the first time I met you, and that I just have always really looked up to you for taking the reins for yourself and being like, I'm going to make this space. And you really have, and it's incredible. And the thing about Pornhub too is that you're so right. You know, people are always like, how do I find the ethical porn? How do I find the real lesbian porn? No, nobody's making it. Nobody's making it. I hear that stuff and I'm just like, it's so frustrating because we are making it. We are so
I make it all the time. I need more eyeballs on it.
Yes.
I'm glad you said that because people,
if you're only watching porn on Pornhub, if that is where you consume all of your porn, you are not, first of all, you're not really consuming it like super ethically. I mean, maybe a little bit more these days because there's not as much, the stolen stuff has sort of gone away. But the truth is that it's appealing to the most common denominator, which is usually the lowest common denominator. Like you're going to see all of that stuff, just those tropes. And like, if it's a trans porn, oh my God, it's so shocking. There's a cock. What? Like that's the low quality stuff. So you really have to get away from those mainstream sources of porn and be looking for the stuff that you want to be seeing.
Definitely. It's almost like complaining that there's no good music, but then realizing that person is only listening to like the Spotify top 40.
Exactly.
Yes. Like, well, where are you looking? Because I make, you know, I make fat lesbian porn like at least 3 times a month. Like I need people to buy it. Like, come on through.
Yes.
So it's out there, but it can be really, really difficult to find. And that leads into a perfect question that was posed by one of our listeners in chat, which is they wanted to know how they can find these porn sites. They wanted some suggestions. So if you guys have a few that you can just kind of throw out here, they want to know where they can find some body positive porn sites.
Hmm. What a wonderful.
Now's your chance to plug.
Okay.
So I run a network of websites. Trouble Films is my film production company and like web production umbrella. So if you go to troublefilms.com, you can see a lot of stuff there, kind of all categories mushed together, all of my projects mushed together. All of the collective directors are all mushed together in there. So you can also find Sin Sage's entire filmmaking collection there as well. So Sin's almost made like 15 or 20 films with us by now in the past 3 years. Like you can get a lot from the websites. And then my queer porn website is queerporn.tv. And that's a bunch of hardcore porn, over 200 videos. I have either filmed them or been in them or know the people who made them, every single video on that website. So if you want to know where exactly your porn is coming from, you can get it directly from Queer Porn TV. Also in 2002, I launched my first website, like indiepornrevolution.com is like, nice. It's 20 years old. It's called NoFo, but it's kind of hard to get to NoFo. But if you go to indiepornrevolution.com, that's another one of my porn sites. So those are 3 sites you can check out that I've created, because what's interesting about me, or like from what I hear from like Sin and other people who know my work really closely, is I kind of invented content creating like 10 years before it happened, by making the realization that nobody was going to, make me a porn star, that the only person who was going to, help me succeed in this was going to be me and my community and like my cheerleaders and lovers and family, you know. That's when I was just like, fine, I'll just start my own websites. I'll just start a whole network. Like, why not? If they can have a porn empire, why can't I?
Yep. Like Sin said, you were definitely way ahead of the curve, and that's fantastic. I love hearing what you've done.
Thank you. And like, there's a tons of really rad people like on OnlyFans and ManyVids and Pornhub. And if you type in, you know, BBW porn star or fat plus size porn star in Pornhub, you might find out who some of the big players are. I definitely have some favorites if I can divulge.
Please.
I mean, they've been asking. So yeah.
Give them the answers. Okay. Yeah. Well, obviously I'm one of my favorites. So you can look up Courtney Trouble. Particularly my scenes with Sin Sage are really awesome examples of like queer lesbian porn, if you want all the good stuff. I am obsessed with April Flores. She's my big sister and has been like a huge mentor to me in this industry, you know, just helping me navigate being a fat girl. She even has a book called Fat Girl. So yeah, she's probably like my icon when it comes to like BBW or fat or plus size. A few others would be Carla Lane and Marley Moore or Marley the Booty. And I feel like if you look up those three people, you're going to find a lot of porn. So I'll stop there.
Awesome. Well, okay. So thank you for providing that actually, because there is this misnomer that there's just not stuff out there and people really do need to just kind of have an idea of where to look. But I wanted to go back on something that Courtney said earlier and then Sin kind of built off of. And that was, Courtney had mentioned that like you find these kinds of issues in media and movies, like everywhere, right? And then we were talking about just how hard it can be in general for people who have difficulty breaking into different things. So porn and just regular everyday society, there's a lot of tie-ins, right? They influence each other. Porn influences society. Society influences porn. There's body positivity movements in both places. There's also stigmas and issues in both places. So Courtney, I wanted you to touch on it for a second. We've talked about some of the positives and negatives about body positivity and porn, but how does that translate for you to like the general public? Like what issues have you noticed and where are some of the overlaps?
That's such a good question. I feel like I've had a few really good opportunities, this being one of them, to talk about fat sex and body positivity and sexuality. And I definitely think one of the biggest things that comes up is just how to build confidence. And so what I like to tell people, you know, is to try to just get used to your body, you know, try to just get accustomed to it. One of the best ways that I had for that was to actually take pictures of myself. So it's kind of funny how the act of making porn helped me naturalize and normalize my fat body and helped me come to a place where I was feeling extremely body positive. And then I also realized that the more I exposed myself to other fat people in the media, be it, you know, April Flores in her films or someone like Lizzo or someone like Beth Ditto, who are two musicians and actresses that I really admire for being fat in public. you know, like people talk a lot about like, oh, you've got a lot of confidence. Like, oh, you're a big, beautiful woman. And I'm like, so I also want to say like, there are no exceptions. All bodies are beautiful. Fat, thin, middle, no body, green body, blue body, you're a smurf, great. Your body is beautiful. Like, that's not the conversation. The conversation is, how do you get to a place where you're feeling positive enough about your body to take some of the risks that maybe you've been wanting to take? Take a boudoir photo, go on a first date, you know, like sign up for Tinder. I think those things are so crucial. Like for most of, from all of us, you know, finding that confidence to like ask for something that we want. Yes. And I do feel like self-esteem is the first thing that people try to steal from us, especially women, especially young girls. Absolutely. They're constantly trying to take away our power to be confident, which leads to success. And yeah. So that's the biggest fight, you know, and it's about mainstream society, you know, and I think Lizzo is one of the most powerful examples of that. I feel like she's very vocal about fat phobia in celebrity life. And like, yeah, I mean, it's a whole different world now, too, than it was like 3 or 4 years ago. Like even just Rihanna getting pregnant, like changed the world. Like Rihanna gaining 20 pounds changed the world, because some people were having a conversation about in between bodies and how like skinny people can be fat and fat people can be skinny. And like, there's all this stuff going on, and it really is just about building confidence.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. In between bodies and all of that stuff. And I want to say too, you know, I think a common misconception is kind of that working in porn or sex work, being a stripper, is really, really competitive, and that putting your body out there for the world just to consume will make you feel worse about it. And you know, I guess I can only speak for myself, but obviously, like, we're always going to encounter a hater from time to time. They're going to find, like, the one little thing about our bodies that we might be insecure with, or all the little things that we might be a little insecure with, and then they're going to jump on that and use it as a weapon against us. And so that happens from time to time to every single one of us, for sure. But my experience has been that rather than feeling this sense of competition, rather than feeling this idea that, oh, like, my thigh goes out here in this area, or there's cottage cheese here on that area, or, you know, like, nitpicking my body in that way. If I had this little voice inside of me that does that, I get on the internet and my fans are like, oh, I love that little thing right there on your thigh or whatever. Like, it's so sexy. And I'm like, what? This is me in the past. But over the years, it was more just like this concept that there's no perfection, does not exist. It's so in the eye of the beholder. And so, right. You know, if I'm being my own worst critic, well, then it's almost like the universe sends me, I'm sure we love that here, this little, someone will pop up and be like, oh, that one thing that I just happen to be feeling insecure about today. Someone will come up and be like, God, I love that one thing about your body, and without me even saying anything about it. So I feel almost the opposite, that it's like that being in this industry has made me feel more confident about my body, because it's made it easier for me to just be like, oh, that one person who said that shitty thing, like, that's just one person, they can fuck off. Like, all these people over here like this about me. Mm-hmm. And in that way, it's really made me like a much more confident person in general, like not just about my body, but just about like my being and stuff. Like, I do feel super empowered in a lot of different ways. So yeah, people might be surprised to hear that about porn stars. But I would love to take a call right now. So let's talk.
Yes, let's
do it. Jamie from Texas, he, him pronouns. Let me just pull up Jamie. Hello.
Hello. Hello there.
Hi, Jamie.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to do what I've done a couple of times on the show, which is basically bare my own silliness and hopefully it be a catalyst for conversation. So my question or my topic was about verisimilitude in porn, the feeling of it being honest and real. I really like it. I like the idea of the people that I'm watching and getting off to are enjoying doing what they're doing. However, it's why, like, one of my most searched tags is like amateur. But of course, I'm not completely blinkered and blinded to the realities of the industry, that a lot of those things are staged. They're just made to look amateur. And I have a suspicion that certain tastes that I've developed over the years have been influenced by trends and not particularly healthy ones. For example, a shaved mons. I like the look of it, but I know that it has detrimental health effects potentially. And even more to that, I also have a suspicion that a lot of the vaginas I'm seeing have undergone vaginoplasty, labiaplasty, and that's more common than people would like to say. And I'm thinking, so I've got this cognitive dissonance, like, oh, I really like the look of that, but, and it's presented as real, but is it a crafted illusion, and have I been suckered in by that, basically?
You can see it's me and Courtney. No, I want to say too that, yeah, this is something that comes up a lot. People are constantly talking about, oh, well, you feel bad about your own vagina, your own vulva, your labias, because you're watching porn and everybody in porn has had labiaplasties. And so that is why you're comparing your body against this unrealistic standard. I have been in the industry 20 years. I can say that I have seen a vast plethora of vulvas and labias, and they look all different. And some of them do look small and pink and pretty, and I guess what would be considered by some ideal. And some look, you know, big and red, and some look, you know, one labia is flapping off to one side, the other's flapping smaller on the other side. And I'm trying to point out that, like, the amount of vulvas that I have seen in this business varies greatly. And I'm not going to say that no one in porn has had a labiaplasty, but I am going to say that I think it's probably way fewer than you imagine in your head. And it's the same thing about the pubis mons being shaved. That is really a personal decision. And I do think in the maybe early 2000s, it was a thing where it was like, oh, everyone had to have it shaved. But, you know, I will say like Sasha Grey came along and she had this big patch of hair and she was the biggest porn star in the world at that time. And I was like, if she can do it, why can't I do it? And then I started growing that patch of hair on the top. And then now we see it all the time. So, I think it might have to do with like the porn you're consuming, the places where you're looking for it. And that is what is being served mm-hmm. up to you. But that is just not, it's certainly not my reality in porn. And then lastly, I just am really curious why you think there are like medical issues around shaving your mons.
I've just watched, it's not like terrible, but it's like you get micro tears from the razors and that can cause a higher risk of potential infection. It's the same as the kind of thing when you shave, like I shave my face and head. So I get cuts and tears and they can get infected. And the thing is, because it's a warm, damp area, and yes, it is self-cleaning, but it is an orifice and therefore potentially susceptible to infection.
He's actually not wrong.
No.
At all.
the only thing that I think is a little off is that, so the part that's self-cleaning is the inside of the vagina.
Yes.
That's what cleans mm-hmm. itself for the yeah. most part, but that can, the pH can get thrown off and you get an infection that way. But when we're talking about shaving, so I shave the sides, for example, I shave the sides and the undercarriage area, but not the top that much. And so I have had where like an ingrown hair happened and I was trying to like squeeze it out and then it did get infected and I got a boil down there. But that is not the same as getting like a sexually transmitted infection. That is
No, I didn't mean that. I mean, I literally meant like not an STI, like literally, an ingrown hair or a large pimple or just an infected hair follicle.
It is really irritating to use a razor, but we have a lot of options these days. I just this morning went and got laser down on my pussy, and it's been working amazingly for me. But we do have lots of other options. There are lots of products to help ease razor burn and stuff like that. So, Courtney, do you want to comment on anything? I didn't want to like steamroll this.
I think a lot of it these days boils down to personal preference. So, I definitely have heard like kind of horror stories or complaints in the past. You know, I didn't want to shave my legs for this. I didn't want to shave my armpits for this. I didn't want to shave my pubic mons, but it's being required of me. And it's at that point that I want to have like this little uncomfortable conversation about like sex work. Is that, you know, we live in a capitalist society and sometimes, you know, you have to do things for your job, regardless of whether it's porn or music mm-hmm. or being a doctor. And like, you know, hygiene matters and like my hair color matters. Like there's just certain things that we do for work that may help with business, may help with marketing, may make us feel comfortable on set, you know. So someone's body mm-hmm. hair is usually, I haven't heard it talked about in a really long time, actually. Yeah. I do feel like Sasha made a big difference. And, I just wanted to say, like, I know there's just some like situations where you don't want to shave the pubic mons, but I don't think that that's really totally. Like medical. But it's like, you are right. Like you can get pimples or, you know, aggravate your HPV, you can aggravate herpes. So those are two things that I would say, like, hey, color, you know, have some good sexual health. But I also think if you're watching contemporary porn and someone has a fully shaved vulva, that's probably their choice.
Yeah, totally. And the other thing about the sort of the labiaplasty, I want to go back to that for a second. I will just say that when even going back to my early days before there was a lot of me on the internet, I was hired based off of my performances, my previous performances, or people that I knew that were referring me to other people. I'd get booked and then no one would ever ask to see my vulva before I did the scene. It's not like I would get on the scene and then take off my pants and I'm about to have sex and they're like, wait a minute, is her vulva more red than the rest of her body? And are her labia lips showing on the outside? Oh, that's it. Everybody go home. We're not shooting this scene. Like, that has literally never happened. And I do have, like, I had some anatomical differences down there, and like, no one has ever mentioned it. No one has ever said, ooh, that's disgusting. You're fired. Like, so that's just my experience, is that, you know, some women who get into porn have these so-called ideal vulvas or whatever, and, you know, lots of us do not. And that's never kept us from getting booked or hired or selling our products or anything. So I just really want to assure you that if you like the way a certain vulva looks, that's probably just something that you like. And it's the same thing with, if you like the way a shaved pussy looks, that's probably just something that you've grown to like. And I don't think you need to feel any sort of guilt for that, because there doesn't need to be any. These are just like the way our bodies are.
Yeah. I always like to think, or at least do my best to seek out porn that I am as fairly certain as possible has been made by people who enjoy it, who are doing it for fun, or at least enjoying their work, so to speak. Which kind of brings me on to my second topic just quickly. The rise of the virtual cam girl. Like, if people are a little bit shy about showing their actual body, real-time puppeting a virtual one. If you've ever heard of Project Melody, I think she's one of the more famous ones.
I have, for sure. I'm a tech nerd. Like, I love computers. I love VR. Like, I love TikTok. I love, like, all of this new stuff that's happening, like, not the metaverse, but, like, in virtual reality, in virtual meeting spaces. I went to South by Southwest and was like having like dinner with some tech people who were building like a holographic strip club, and I got really excited about it. Ooh. I don't know, like, really have an answer to your question, but like, I'm definitely a huge fan of virtual cam girls, and I definitely don't even think it's about confidence. Like, I think it's actually like maybe a little bit of a fetish for me, and I want to try it. Oh my God, but how many options are there to like play dress up and try on different bodies?
The things you have seen, you can just modify yourself in any way you like, be whatever you want to be. It's one of the wonderful things about virtual reality, that you can wear whatever form you wish. I called into an earlier show about that. Absolutely. The one problem with that is that sometimes the barrier for entry can be somewhat high in terms of tech, the cost, for really good motion tracking. But I'm sure there's plenty of resources out there. And I'm sure since you're all in the industry, you could reach out to Mel and say, hey, what's your rig? Like, how can we,
reach out to Mel. I know the coder behind Mel. Yeah. Like,
well, I want to thank you for your questions.
Doing in my future, so that's a great topic, Jamie. Thank you.
Yeah, those are some really, really good questions. And I just wanted to roll in really fast as the non-performer in the group, who consumes her own porn but does not make it. That I wanted to kind of throw out there that I wanted to validate two things that you said. First of all, that you want to see porn where you know that people, or you're reasonably sure that people enjoy themselves. That is fantastic. And I love hearing people say that. And I feel the same way. Whether I'm consuming it by myself or with my husband, like, I will stop a video for that very reason. Like, nope, she doesn't look like she's enjoying herself. And that is a huge turnoff for me. So even if someone else is enjoying it, it's going to be a hard no, and it's going to go off. So like, I really wanted to validate you and just tell you how much I appreciate that as well. But also the thing about the vulvas, when you were asking that question, I really get that. Whether it's vulvas or shaving or any sort of body type, I had a lot of body issues in my younger years based on the porn I was consuming, because that was the way that I saw naked women at the time. Like, I didn't see them in the real world per se. So that did cause some issues and confusion for me when I was much younger. And so that is something that I think is a relevant topic to bring up about the porn industry, is just the variety of porn that's actually out there versus what we get exposed to if we don't know where to look. So I'm gonna let you go now, but I really appreciate your call. Mm-hmm. And I think you made some really, really good points that are worth talking about. So Jamie, yeah, thank you for calling in.
Absolutely.
Nope. And I may have disconnected him right as he was saying something because there is that delay. So my apologies, but we are going to go on to commercial now, and then we'll take our next call.
Certainly there are divided families, you know. Yeah. Christ said that he was going to do that. Hey. So, you know.
Is that a fulfilled prophecy?
I suppose so, right? Just look to the trees, Aaron.
I want to believe in the ice wall, baby. I want to go see the ice wall. Book me a first class trip to the ice wall. I'll pay whatever I got. Where the f*** did we get our penguins? And
bring me the ice.
The Lord turned me from my wretched ways and I'm forgiven. And it's like, wow, that's so nice. So you can still do whatever you want, which it's funny that they claim that atheists are only atheists because we just want to sin and we want to do whatever we want when they do the same shit.
I hear you talk about it, and it's like it's an embarrassment to us Christians that we've had slavery in the Bible.
Well, it should be, yeah. I think the ownership of other people should be an embarrassing thing, yeah.
God is not anti-slavery. He's a proponent of slavery.
Why aren't you embarrassed by that?
Well, the difference between you and me is I am a researcher. You are not.
You're the researcher? Ben, look, Shannon, Ben Dan's a researcher. We're just a couple of who don't know anything. So that's why I'm asking you, Ben Dan.
I'm looking at my degree. Like, what a waste of money.
Okay, all right. So we have another caller. Sin, why don't you go ahead and introduce us to our next caller?
Yes, okay. We have got Paul Rex, and they are from Florida. So, Paul Rex, how are you? Welcome to the show.
It's a roll, Rex, and I'm
oh, I'm sorry.
Happy to be here.
It's a fan.
I know.
Hi, Rex. Hi, Rolf.
Hello. I mean, probably Courtney follows my Twitter, but because I've been camming, even on my internet's been out for a little bit, but I make solo videos and stuff.
Yeah.
And okay. I noticed that a lot of my solo videos where I jerk my cock a little bit always sell a little bit more than if I, do bottoming and stuff. Mm. And since I'm non-binary, I don't have big tits, but I got a fat ass, right? And I don't know, I'm a little starstruck right now. I like both of you. I really do. I really like both of you. And
I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. And because of both of you, I probably wouldn't be doing this right now.
I've seen your whole journey.
That's awesome. Well,
thank you very much. I mean, you've seen it. I feel like you've encouraged a lot of my more bolder side.
So what would you say about body positivity and porn, Raw?
Personally, since I don't have big tits, that wasn't a thing to stop me, and I feel like I don't need them because I got a lot of muscle, right? I know my ass is real big, so people like that. So I was gauging a lot of my reactions on cam, to see what people like, and people like my face, people like my ass. So just, like I said, I tell that those things validated me. I didn't feel like I need any extra work. I didn't need to do anything more than what I already got on me. You know what I mean? Even though I like dressing up a lot, I will admit that that's really my favorite thing. But as far as porn goes, it's like I don't see very many people like me in it, like in the mainstream stuff. Like,
yep.
I'm sure Courtney knows about me retweeting like a lot of blowjob scenes and stuff I see from independent creators, a lot of POV-esque stuff with different queer creators who, like I say, they're not quite femme and they're not quite boyish, They're like femboys. And I really like that stuff a lot. And I will admit it turns me on, right? Because I kind of do the same thing a little bit. I feel like I do it differently, but they all have partners and people to work with. I mean, I've been wanting to work with people, but it's kind of hard where I'm at the moment. But I always like blowjob porn, and then I like femboy stuff. And I very rarely see, like, say, a cute femboy do, like, a big old blow bang, right? Or do, like, throat gagger type stuff, It's something that I like to see, but I don't. Yeah. I don't see it much. I think I made. I might. I know I did some stuff with my toys and that stuff. I don't know why it doesn't sell. But anyway.
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes it's like I'll make that feels like this is amazing. This is definitely going to sell. This is so passionate and hot and horny. And then I put it up in my stores and it just doesn't do that great. And then I'll make a custom video where I'm like, this is ridiculous. No one's going to buy it. And then it sells like crazy. So I try to just not have any expectations for any clip that I make of how much money it's going to make or whatever. I just put the clips up there and let the catalog do its thing and, you know, and just kind of, oh, well, what am I going to make next? I think the number one mm-hmm. thing that's awesome that you are, I'm like a firm believer in making the porn that you want to see in the world. And I mean, Courtney is an amazing example of how that really started something that was needed, that space needed to be filled in this business. And so it sounds like you're kind of doing that for yourself already. And you know what you like to watch and mm-hmm. you know what you want to see more of. And you just, you make that where you can. I will say blow bangs and stuff requires a lot of people and a lot of capital to pay them all, or just a lot of people who are really down for the cause. But you know, where depending on where we uh-huh. live in our community, that's really hard to get to sometimes. But I think just keep experimenting and playing.
It's on my bucket list. I'm trying to say it was on my bucket list of things I like to do. I mean, I put it like this. There's some stuff I do see, like from I forgot this German production. They go by legal porno or whatever, and I was
watching
Gene Hollywood. I've seen that stuff, and I will admit I got a boner watching that. I'm like, they just got every hole, you know. And even just the blowjob one they did with just her, it was like, it's almost like Evil Angel level of like Johnny Darko, like, you know. Because I really like the way his stuff is very glamorous, you know, the way he shoots it.
Kind of sounds like porn.
Yeah, I like the lingerie, and I like the way just the music, you know, sets the mood, and everybody just looks beautiful. And then I like Aiden Starr's stuff, which is like super fucking hot. I mean,
yeah, and making some really, really awesome stuff for sure. But I was curious about what you told the screener. You had a question about using slurs.
Yeah.
Can you like elaborate on that question? We'll see if we can give
you there. Oh yes, that's right. Slurs and stuff. Because when I get back to Cameron, but when I was Cameron, you know, I always hear a BBC, you know, or some people just, I'm always some guy saying, I'm got out of jail. I'm like, yeah, all right. It'll say some things I wouldn't say personally myself, right? And
right.
Also, I try not to market my videos like that. I don't use those terms like BBC or, you know, the F slur or, you know, things I won't say myself. If I'm mad and angry, I'll say anything but those.
But, yeah, and so you know, I think that's the best way to be. Like, just if you know that you have reasons for not wanting to say those things, then continue to not say them. And when other people are saying it, or if, you know, what we encounter sometimes when we make custom videos is getting people who ask us to say those kinds of things. And to me, it doesn't really matter who it is asking me. I just know that I'm not going to say those things. I'm not going to put those things out into the world. So if you want me to say different things, because that's what your fetish is, like maybe we can find words that I find appropriate. But if mm-hmm. not, then I will just turn the custom down. I will just say no, because I don't make that kind of content. There are other people you can go and find that do, but I'm not going to be that one. So I think what you're doing is the best thing. And the people who need to find your stuff are going to find it. And you don't ever have to do anything that you don't want to do, especially if you think it causes harm out in the world in the bigger picture. And I think that's really important. Like, I have some things that I made in the past when I was a little bit more, like economically dependent and new in the business. And I look back now and I'm kind of, I don't want to say that like I'm angry that I did that, but I do wish that I hadn't. It didn't feel right at the time, but it was sort of like economic coercion and stuff like that. And now it's just like, I wish I could erase that from my own history, but it's there forever. So, you know, always keeping that sort of thing in mind, and then just like making sure you're using your powers to make the world like a more accepting place. advice is really like what we should
I've learned from you, and I've really learned from you and Chelsea and Courtney's example. And whenever I go to make my content, that's my thing, you know, because it's sexy and hot without having to be, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, and I think you're, you know, you're like a really fine example. Well, you're a wonderful porn maker, by the way. I've seen a couple of your promos and stuff, and I'm just really happy you're doing it, you know, and it's definitely a choice if you're going to let, you know, camming, I feel, is one of those harder jobs in the adult industry because you are getting online and you're getting faced with all kinds of people from all around the world. Mm-hmm. And I have, like, I definitely feel like out of all of the jobs, that's the one where you just get the most harassed, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm really proud of you, mm-hmm. if I can say that, for being a cam, being a cam model and making porn. I think, you know, if you keep making the stuff that you want to see, like the sloppy blowjobs and like put your fat mm-hmm. ass out there, put yes. your beautiful face out there, mm-hmm. you know, like I think mm-hmm. you are gonna be on the right path to just to keep being a porn artist. And like, I have to admit, I've made a lot of scenes that have just never sold. And yeah. I mean, raw baby, like it's gonna happen a million times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, sometimes you may pick up later, like the algorithms may hit it right.
To keep making it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Manage your expectations and mm-hmm. just like do what you like and doing. Have fun doing it, you know? Yeah. I think you're definitely on the right track.
And it's definitely like, it's the hardest thing to say no, but it's also the most powerful thing to say no. I'm not going to make porn like that. I'm not making BBC porn. I'm not going to buy into your racist bullshit. Right. I'm not going to buy into any transphobia or fatphobia or homophobia on my channel. You can say that, baby. Right. You should.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your ass.
Yeah. Well, so I want to throw something out there really quick.
So normally,
Raul, thank you so much for callers calling us. We're gonna move on, but we really, really appreciate you calling in and thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, awesome that you called
in. Nice. I'm glad
I did. So I have a question. We were talking about with Raul and the content creation being like we're kind of driving our own content creation because it doesn't exist out there or because we can't get jobs and stuff. So I have a question for you ladies. When you are doing independent stuff, have you noticed that the independent industry drives the more traditional porn industry? Like, are you guys noticing significant changes in, okay, they had it done either on independent porn or maybe a cam girl or boy? Like, do they drive change into the industry where you guys are seeing positive changes? And if so, how?
Oh God, I want to be specific so bad that I shouldn't.
Do it.
And this is like, I don't, like, there's no negativity about any of this. Like, it's all positive. This is a good thing that happened. So there was no like fat lesbian, there was no BBW girl at all until I made Lesbian Curves in like 2014, 2015.
Yes.
that film made $14,000 that year, which
oh my God,
was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, for just astronomical amount of money for me to make in a year off of one title alone, just like, and then combined, like not even. So that's data. Like, that tells that's me that good. People want to see authentic, they want to see real queer porn with plus size femmes or lesbians. I called it Lesbian Curves because it was catchy and easy, but was talking about people of all genders and all sizes and stuff. But marketing works. So, like, that was data, right? So then I would just tell everybody that I met in the porn industry that Lesbian Curves is doing a really good job and it's winning awards and like getting nominated for things. Yeah. And like, huh, lo and behold, in the next couple of years, what do we see?
Oh, that's awesome.
All of this stuff. Now, okay, so I'll pick a favorite. My favorite one of all of the plus size porn that came after Lesbian Curves that I feel like I had something to do with that was Shape of Beauty on Adult Time. Bree Mills did such a great job with that series. And if I feel like I was probably the last scene I got to work with Angela White, who's like, was quite literally the current winner of the Performer of the Year award at the AVN Awards and XBiz. There was, no other star bigger than Angela White when this happened. Yeah. So to be able to actually do like a lesbian girl mainstream adult scene, like porn scene with this superstar, and have it like funded and distributed like in a mainstream type of way, really felt like the culmination of a lot of hard work that I did to make plus size queer porn stars more visible in the industry. And like, I know I didn't do it alone. Like when I talk about April and Carla, I'm like, those women were in front of me, that paving the way for all of this stuff to happen. So when my gay ass shows up on set, I have a good time. I'm paid. I'm fed. I'm well taken care of, you know, and it's just like such a community effort, of course. But like, if I could just see in front of me that path tumbling straight from nobody's making fat lesbian porn, I'm going to make it. Oh, now everyone's making it. It's only a good thing.
Absolutely. Yes.
And like, that's why we continue to push buttons, both Sin and I, and a lot of people at Trouble Films. Like, so we're always trying to like push the barrier of like, what the mainstream industry is going to deem as like acceptable. Cause like, let's face it, sometimes they just don't understand.
That is too true. Yeah. And when you talk about pushing barriers, we talk a lot about like the positivity, but then there's also content that we don't want to necessarily shame, but we do need to kind of contrast it with. And that's content that includes rough sex, verbal, physical humiliation, and elements that might be seen as more of a negative way of addressing a vulnerable minority. And so what do you guys say about that, or have to say about like the people that enjoy the content that might seem more like shaming versus celebrating?
Well, I always bristle a little bit against that sort of like coming from that place, only because I, on the one hand, I can see why, if it's not viewed correctly, and so to speak, that it could be potentially harmful. But it's, you know, and then it can also be that like I spend so much time having to like defend sex work and defend pornography that I feel like it doesn't even leave space to have these honest conversations about things, because it's just like, it's always constantly under attack for so many different reasons. So there's that. But the main thing that I want to say for part of it, just like a piece of this, is that, you know, when we do these things, like we are fully consenting to what's going on. And so if I know that I fully consent to a rough sex scene, the person I'm working with consents to a rough sex scene, they want to be fucked hard. They want their hair pulled. They say, spit on my face. I have had girls where like I put my hand sort of like creeping on their chest and they grab my hand, put it on their throat and say, choke me, you know, and I'm just like, what, should I do it? I don't know. But like now what's happening is we are having these conversations before the scene starts. I don't even want to say now. I mean, this has been going on for a long time, but it's like now it's, these companies are hyper aware again, like ever since sort of the Me Too thing happened, where it's just like, we're going to film this conversation before we even start. So, okay, we start at the top of the head. Are you okay with hair pulling? Are you okay with face squeezing, face slapping, spitting? Okay, now we're going to move down the body, tit squeezing. What are you in? Like, what's okay? What are your limits? How are we going to communicate this without necessarily having to stop the scene? And then we also have safe words on set. So it's like, if you need a scene to stop right now, we just know we can say red and everyone's going to stop and say, is everything okay? Are you guys all right? But I think too, like, we don't want to erase the fact that there are women who enjoy rough sex, you know, and sometimes I think these conversations can be so much about like the harm that this type of porn is doing that we sort of start to think of all, let's just say, you know, like all women, well, they're all dainty, delicate flowers. And then you get that like Madonna whore thing going on where like, you know, your wife is like, please fuck me hard and slap my ass and call me a slut. And it's like, well, I can't do that with you. I can only do that with like the stripper I see at the strip club or something. With her, it's okay, but not with my wife, you know. Right. And And that just like totally takes away our agency and the type of pleasure that we might want. And that's just like one side of it. Of course, there is also the other side too. And especially when parents will not talk to their children about pornography. And I think that is like something really important mm-hmm. that needs to happen now, because now you can't escape it. All young people are going to see this stuff. Under 18, they're looking at it. And like, it appears that there's not much we can do about this, except to talk to your fucking shitty children. Like, like, I don't want to have to. It's not my job. It isn't. You know? I want to make erotic media for adults to enjoy. And I shouldn't have to like censor what I'm making because children are looking at it and their parents aren't putting any of this stuff into context for them in a world in which they absolutely must. That's my opinion.
That I love that, because okay, well that absolutely leads into my next question. And I know we're going to kind of close the show up on these next couple of questions. And then I want to give Courtney a chance to plug her stuff. But what kind of guidelines can you give the audience for ethical porn consumption? Mm. And Courtney, let's start with you. What do you think?
Thank you for saying ethical porn consumption, because as I was getting ready for this question, I think I'm really sensitive about the way that people throw around terms like ethical porn or feminist porn, because how do we rate it? And, you know, is there like a system? And like after 20 years, I can honestly say like every porn scene, every porn set, every moment, every person is so different that what makes production, you know, or post-production ethical may be different from project to project. Like a lot of it is about fair compensation. So were the performers paid in cash? Were they paid in content? What does that contract look like? And that's, you know, that's being talked about in all aspects of porn. So it's really hard for me when I hear companies saying, oh, I'm branding myself as ethical porn, because I do see a lot of that contractual work and negotiations around consent happening at all levels, like in the mainstream levels, you know, just like various pockets of pornography. It's also a very decentralized industry, especially because there are so many independent porn creators now, and also just sex workers being porn stars online. So the ethics really does come around consumption, and it's asking our fans and our customers and our clients to think about the ways in which they're consuming pornography. One of my big questions to porn viewers is, are you going in blind? Have you ever seen like a documentary about porn, or have you ever watched behind the scenes content? Like, have you ever paid for a porn site, or are you just looking at random videos on Pornhub or any torrent site or tube site for that matter? Because, you know, and as our last caller was saying, I'm into blow bangs, I'm into this, I'm into that. I do think that of a lot of porn viewers are just sort of consuming porn rather blindly. And that's not to say that they're watching the wrong companies or the wrong people or the wrong things. That's not really it. I think it's about like recognizing like some different facets of the industry, like, and also understanding sexuality a little bit, maybe deeper than the normal person does. You know, like I think sex education and porn literacy go together. I think they should both be taught in high school and middle school, because Sin is absolutely right. There's no way that we can stop minors from viewing pornography. Those days are over. I saw Playboy when I was 8 years old. So like that conversation is moot. We cannot protect porn from children, protect children from porn. Well, maybe we should protect porn from children, because.
But no, you make a really good point. Right. Yeah. It's all about having the conversation and knowing how to deal with it when kids do come in contact with porn, how to have that conversation with them versus bastardizing it and making it such a horrible thing.
And I would say if someone knows a little, you know, if someone knows about sex and about LGBTQ issues and about kink, that watching porn for them isn't going to be such a mystery.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. At all. So like for me, ethical porn consumption, ethical porn as a topic, you know, of course there's going to be bad directors, bad producers, bad performers, bad guys, bad girls. They exist. They also exist in the music industry and mainstream film. I don't know. I do know why we get singled out, and it's because of sex work stigma and, you know, sexism. This just whole like white supremacy, like Christian world that we are surviving right now.
Well, so then where else can people find other like resources?
Oh, yes, I did. I wanted to tell you guys about one resource that is actually trying to parse out what ethical porn production might look like. And it is an important conversation on our side of production as well, because there are bad actors, and every studio, every performer should have like guidelines for what they're doing. So while it's a really diverse, decentralized industry, I do think, you know, like Trouble Films has a way of working. Since Age Studios has a way of working, you know, particularly around like testing, consent, negotiation, post-production, like these conversations happen on every set. So the website that I wanted to plug is called Porn Better. It's porn-better.com. And they are trying to parse out what ethical feminist production conditions look like. And like what it looks like when it comes to like what we're talking about with diversity and inclusion and equity, you know, and like what pricing looks like and what actual like ethical access to pornography looks like. Because especially in queer porn, there's a lot of trans people or fat people or minorities of many kinds who are looking for themselves in porn. And, you know, we want to provide that.
Absolutely. I didn't even know about that site, and I'm so happy that it exists. And I hope that we can get more people directed towards that site, especially as people start their own journey into this type of work, be it just through like OnlyFans or whatever, you know. These are all things you need to know. And just thinking about like rates and knowing that some performers are not offered the same rates as other performers doing the same work. I mean, just starting like there even. And so I'm glad this exists, and I hope we can get more eyes on it and stuff like that too. And I will just say real quickly that if you want to consume porn ethically, you got to pay for it. That's just the number one. And so people who are paid and taken care of, they are making porn because they want to, and they're happy to be doing it. And so in those cases, you don't have to worry so much about someone not being happy, or at the very least enjoying, you know, what they're doing. So yes.
at the very least surviving.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh my gosh, we'll make it through somehow.
Also one of the biggest misconceptions, I think, is and stigma based. Oh, porn people must make so much money because why else would they do it? And I always just want to debunk and say I do it because I love it. And I'm just feel so lucky and so privileged sometimes, and just so fucking thankful that that like this is my job. And that I'm able to make ends meet enough to not have to go get another job. And that's a big deal in this industry.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Just because you see us on your TV does not mean we're making movie star money, okay?
I wore my best dress for you.
Yes. Yes, awesome. Well, Courtney, please, if you have links and things, you can tell us where all the viewers can find you and your stuff.
I would say you should go to CourtneyTrouble.com first. It's my safe for work portfolio. So you can just read more about me, look at some of my art, and all the links to my adult content is right there. And I am the proud owner of Trouble Films. And the website for that is troublefilms.com. And you can buy porn there, or you can subscribe and get a membership and have like an unlimited smorgasbord of queer porn, indie porn, me and Sin, our seven scenes together.
I just can't stop working with you. What is it? I don't know.
We're like porn wives.
Exactly.
The last time we shot together, we ended up cuddling and watching X-Files together and like snacking. And like, I was like, are we girlfriends? We're kind of like porn girlfriends.
Absolutely.
I love you so much.
I love you to death. All right. Well, thank you so much for being our guest, Courtney. This has been absolutely wonderful. I'm so happy that you were on.
And please have some BBW stars on here because I have questions as well.
Totally. Yes. We just have to connect with them and get them on. So we are working on that. In the meantime, everyone can keep up with what's happening with the ACA on our website at atheist-community.org. Or you can email this show with sex@atheist-community.org or email the ACA with tv@atheist-community.org. tiny.cc/AEN podcast is your one-stop shop where you can catch an audio version of this show. And you can also follow us on the Facebook Secular Sexuality Fan Group. We also have a Discord. So the link for that is tiny.cc/ACD Discord. And do not miss out on the merch, tiny.cc/merch ACA. We have some cool pillows and mugs and things like that. We could not do any of this awesome shit that we do without our amazing crew. So let's say hello to those awesome crew.
Yes, hi, thank crew. You, crew. Thank without you, there'd be no us.
Magic.
Okay, so ladies, we are right up towards the end of the show, but what are your final thoughts on the topic? And Courtney, I'm going to give you first stab at that. What do you want to leave the audience with tonight?
Some inspiration. I feel like I feel inspired to go make some body positive porn or just bring some. I love the way we parsed out body positivity in general and just sort of like, it's about bringing positivity to the table. So a little bit of homework for everyone listening. How are you going to bring positivity to the bedroom this week? How are you going to bring body positivity to the bedroom this week? Compliment yourself, compliment your partner, or compliment yourself, partner.
Yes,
leave the lights on.
But oh my God, leave the lights on.
Leave the fucking lights on, but not like the big overhead light. You want like a nice subtle light over here, you know, leave that light on.
Something soft. Yeah.
Make a sex tape.
Awesome. Well, thank you everybody for joining us. As creators, it's really great to know that like whatever your body type is, there's a place for you. And if not, you go pave that road. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful to know that if someone's not finding what they want to see out there, or they're not getting represented or hired where they want to be, that they are out there able to do their own thing. That is really, really exciting. As consumers, we know that like whatever turns you on, it's really awesome to know that there's so much out there. So if you're having trouble finding it, keep looking, ask people, listen to shows that like ours and ask where to find stuff because it is out there. So as we close up, I want you to go out there, do a little homework, find what works for you and use it to give yourself a big old orgasm, or better yet, give somebody else one.
Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytth and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callth.